Turning our attention to nutrition today, and one of the things I want to zero in on with our guest is relates to sweeteners and understanding them. There's so many out there, and I think there's not always the best information about sweeteners and what effects they might have on us or not have on us. Susan Nitzke knows a lot about it, and I'm glad to have her along. She's an emerita professor of extension in nutritional sciences at the UW-Madison. Great to have her back, and certainly you have questions as we talk nutrition with her, zeroing in a bit on sweeteners to begin with, but we'll talk about other things as well. The number 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org or go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. You can post a question or a comment there. Sue, good to see you again. Thanks for coming by.
Happy to be here.
It's hard to avoid added sugars unless we absolutely make everything from scratch. Isn't that pretty much?
Well, and when I make food from scratch, I sometimes add some sugar myself.
Oh,
so,
sure.
Yeah, and that's a good thing to start with. We don't have to totally avoid it, but I think cutting it in half or less for many of us would be a wonderful thing to do for our overall health, for our waistline, for the balance of other nutrients that we would have more room for.
Yeah.
It turns out that research shows that the average American has about 20-some teaspoons a day of added sugar in their diet. If you think about, you know, some start with a couple of those in their coffee and just go right on through. You know, there's a tremendous range. Some don't have much and some have tons. The top sources are sodas and fruit drinks, followed by grain-based desserts like cupcakes and Twinkies and all those good things, or like breakfast pastries, donuts.
Yeah.
And, you know, if we take a little time, we can think about how to cut back on our added sugar intake without ruining our enjoyment of our food.
Mm-hmm.
And part of that involves, for many people, using what is technically called non-nutritive sweeteners or artificial sweeteners.
Yeah.
Or there's a bunch of names for things like, aspartame and those things, and I have some information on that for you too.
Does it matter whether to our bodies? Does it matter if we have natural sweeteners or we have artificial sweeteners? Or
your body, when you ingest your morning donut, goes, "Oh, sugar!" And how much of that you added versus came from maybe some milk in the donut or something like that, so that it was an inherent part of a naturally occurring food. Your body can't tell the difference. But the dietary guidelines for Americans and all the major mainstream nutrition and health groups, like what used to be called the American Dietetic Association, now the Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics,
mm-hmm.
The Heart Association, the Diabetes Association, et cetera, they all say, you know, don't worry so much about the sugar that comes in fruit and milk and you know, just is naturally there as part of regular wholesome foods. But make a sincere effort to come back on the part that's added during mm-hmm. processing or, as we just mentioned, when you're cooking at home.
Yeah, there's probably a lot of good truth to that. John in Baraboo has a question for you. John, hi.
Good morning. Yeah, I'm wondering what the difference nutritionally, if that's the right word, between a sweet potato and a white or red potato.
Hmm.
Well, you know, all sweet potatoes aren't created equal either, and all white and red potatoes aren't created equal either. So there are several similarities. You know, they grow under the ground. I believe they're part of the same kind of broad botanical family, although that's not my area, so I'm not 100% sure of that. There are white sweet potatoes, there are yellow sweet potatoes, there are sweet potatoes that are almost red. The more, generally speaking, the more color there is in that sweet potato, the more of these phytonutrients, the carotenoid pigments that make it have that color, are going to be present there. And One of the things the Dietary Guidelines for Americans and all these expert groups that I mentioned encourage is to add color to your diet, especially in the variety of fruits and vegetables that you eat. So rather than eat white potatoes on a daily basis, which some of us may have gotten in the habit of doing, have those red and orange sweet potatoes and other kinds of fruits and vegetables with lots of color. Make sure you have something colorful in the fruits and vegetables category every day in your diet. And for most of us, that would be a great start in improving our nutrient intake.
Yeah. There you
good.
Go.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. You can join in, too, at 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call or post on my Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. You can do that, too. What are the concerns primarily about the artificial or the non-nutritive sweeteners? And what does non-nutritive mean anyway?
Yeah. Well, you know, when we talk about ways to make our food sweet, we have such a number of substances to choose from. Of course, the one that's used most often is sucrose, which is the cane sugar or beet sugar, or, you know, when you go to the grocery store and buy a bag of sugar, that's what that is. In food processing, especially in processing that produces a liquid product, the high fructose corn syrup is often used. Nutritionally, it's hardly at all different from regular sugar, which I think a lot of people would be surprised to hear. But there's a huge list that goes on and on of all the substances that basically count as added sugars that can appear as names on the food labels, glucose and fructose and galactose and all kinds of substances. And by the way, for those of your Facebook fans, if they're Facebook fans like I am, you'll see a page from the My Plate system that explains all those names for added sugars that can appear on food labels, and I'd encourage your listeners to take a look at it, because there are some items on there that I think many people get confused by. Like when I buy some expensive organic cereals that I happen to like, they're often sweetened with evaporated cane juice. And when I first saw that term, I started writing letters. This is not a legal term for sugar. You know, what are you doing? You're trying to confuse people more. I'm trying to educate them, and you're trying to make it more confusing. Nobody ever wrote back. I complained to the Food and Drug Administration. They said, yeah, we know. And anyway, terms like evaporated cane juice might sound more nutritious. But in fact, most of our sugar comes from cane, and it's evaporated. And, you know, that may or may not be sort of the low process state, but nutritionally, it's indistinguishable. So evaporated cane juice has no halo on top of its primary identity as a form of added sugar.
There you go. Bev in Oregon. Your turn. Hi, Bev.
Hi. My question is, what's your thoughts of using honey in place of sugar?
Well, first of all, I'll mention that for babies, honey's is off limits. I believe the first year, some experts groups say be especially careful and say the first 2 years, I'm not sure that's necessary. But there's a disease that's very rare but very serious. It's a form of botulism that can occur in young infants when they're given honey because they can't defend against the possible presence of botulism spores like any normal healthy adult or older child could. So although it's rare, you don't want to take a risk of that. So your pediatrician can give you special advice on that if you're more curious. But as a general rule, we say no honey even as an ingredient in processed foods for the first year. So even like honey graham crackers.
Okay.
Okay, so having said that, for older children and adults, honey is on that list of forms of added sugar that you can encounter on food labels. I happen to use quite a bit of honey at our house. I buy it at the farmer's market because I like having it from local sources and supporting the local farmers. But I am not under the false impression that it's lower in calories or somehow more healthful and nutritious. It's no worse than regular sugar. It's a little sweeter per teaspoon, but calorie per calorie, you'd really be splitting hairs to try to try to say why one of them is better than the other. So, you know, enjoy your honey. Use it to make nutritious foods more enjoyable when that's necessary. Like if you're having, in my case, I love raspberries, but I like them even better if they have just a little bit of sugar on them. But don't be fooled into thinking that honey is the good sugar and regular sugar is the bad sugar, because it doesn't work that way.
All right. There we go. And, Bev, thank you. Ellen and Poinette, your turn. Hi.
Hello. How are you?
Great. Thanks for calling.
Good. Thanks for taking my call. I have a few questions. I guess my first is, what would you recommend as an alternative to sugar for sweetener? And then the second part that I have is, I read all of these different things on agave nectar. And I also have read the label and see that it's got like 60 calories or something crazy a serving. And I'm wondering what your thoughts on agave nectar are. Is that a better alternative than sugar? Or?
All right.
The American Dietetic Association, which just recently changed their name to the Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics, just happens to have within the last couple months revised and republished their position statement, which is very thorough, and they check all the literature and they get experts together and they say, okay, what do we know and not know about sugar and other sweeteners? The position of the Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics on use of nutritive and non-nutritive sweeteners is right in front of me as we speak, and it lists agave nectar as one of the forms of sugars that are commonly found in foods. I was recently in Arizona, and they were selling agave nectar all over the place. They have the agave plant out there in abundance, which is part of the cactus family, as my amateur botany would say. It's the same plant that's used to make tequila.
Right.
But its nectar is full of a bunch of kind of exotic substances, fructans and other we call them saccharides, other sweet substances. But in truth, by the time you buy it in the store, it's been highly processed. It's usually treated with enzymes and heat to try to bring out that sweetness. So, you know, if you're looking for a, like, sort of Mother Nature's answer to something sweet without using sugar, I don't really think agave nectar has that much to offer. I mean, it's just treated as another form of added sugar.
Okay, and is stevia the same thing? There's stevia?
Not quite. Stevia is from the leaf of a plant that I believe grows most in South America. It's listed in this position statement that I just referenced as a form of non-nutritive sweetener because it gives your tongue the sensation of a very sweet kind of bolt of lightning if you have very much of it in its purified form. So there's like just one little substance in this leaf that has an intensely sweet flavor. So it's been recently approved by the Food and Drug Administration as another form of non-nutritive sweetener. There were some kind of weird concerns at first that it might have some safety issues, but those were resolved with further study, and the Food and Drug Administration says, yeah, we can't find anything wrong with it, so if you want to use it, go for it. I find it a little expensive, but yeah.
It's safe for kids and stuff, too.
Well, I think, you know, that's a great question, because all of the approved non-nutritive sweeteners and regular sweeteners are, quote, safe for kids. But whether or not you want, how much of it you want to use is what we nutrition people talk about a lot, because we don't want to get kids used to really, really sweet flavors from any particular source.
Sue Nitzke, our guest until 12:30 today here on the Ideas Network. Nutrition is something we all deal with. Many of us struggle to make healthy choices, but even with the best of intentions, it's kind of hard sometimes to know about research as it comes out. And even something like reading the label on a can of soup can be confusing and even frustrating. That's why we're lucky to have Susan Nitzke joining us for many times during the course of the year to talk about health, nutrition, and weight loss. She does a great job of explaining what we need to know and how to stay on top of useful information. And Sue, thanks for coming by to spend time with us. Appreciate it very much.
Glad to be here, Larry.
Really appreciate it very much. And we've zeroed in a little bit on sweeteners and understanding sweeteners. And Sarah in Milwaukee actually has been waiting a while and has a question for you relating to sweeteners or sugar in the fruit. Sarah, are you there?
Hi, I'm here.
Hi, what's on your mind?
I heard Susan say earlier that, you know, if you eat a donut, the sugar in your body, you know, your body can't tell the difference between, you know, let's say the sugar that was in the milk or the, you know, actual artificial sugar from the donut.
Mm-hmm.
So, but isn't there a health difference between eating, let's say, an apple and, let's say, sugar cereal? I mean, your body can distinguish, can your body distinguish that, you know, difference in sugar?
Nope. That's the quick answer. If you take in sugar from an apple or sugar from the frosting on a donut, the sugar is a sucrose molecule. It's absorbed and digested and used for energy or stored as excess fat if you don't need the energy exactly the same way. It's exactly the same molecule. It's sucrose.
But on the other hand, you're not recommending apples.
Of course, I'm not recommending donuts over apples or as the equivalent of apples, because apples have
Lots of other things.
The whole idea about avoiding added sugars and favoring the sugar that's naturally present in foods. So even though your body takes a gram of sugar from either source and processes it exactly the same way, that doesn't mean that the rest of that food isn't more nutritious in one form or the other. And that's why the dietary guidelines and My Plate and all these expert groups spend so much time telling people, when you're cutting back on sugars, cut back on the sugars that are added in processed foods and the table sugar that you might sprinkle on your cereal or whatever. And don't worry so much about the sugar that's naturally present in fruits and milk and nutritious foods, because if cutting back on those would have other nutritional consequences that wouldn't be worth it. Does that answer your question?
Yeah.
Would have more fiber?
Absolutely. And dietary fiber is one of those sort of neglected nutrients that I'm glad you mentioned, because there has been some research that shows that when you get your sugars from these naturally occurring sources, especially fruit, there is almost always a nice component of dietary fiber, especially when you eat the whole apple, skin and all. So the dietary fiber tends to a little bit counteract the metabolic consequences of eating too much sugar. That doesn't mean it takes those calories away or makes sugar into something different, but at least it offers a great nutritional benefit to go along with that little bit of sugar that is naturally occurring, or maybe even not such a little bit in the apples.
And makes apple a better choice than a donut.
Oh, yeah.
You bet. And thanks for giving me a chance to clarify that. So if you take the sugar out of an apple and put it in your food, you've just lost all those nutritional advantages of eating your sugar in the form of an apple.
There you go. Jean in Clam Lake. Hi.
Hi, this is Jean Coobley. Susan, how you doing?
Hi, Jean. Nice to hear from you.
I drink a lot of water, but I don't like water. And I wonder if you know of anything about the Mio, the little flavored, they're sweet and they're flavored things you can put in your water or in juice to give it a different flavor?
Oh, yeah. I've seen them in the stores, and I've seen them advertised in magazines and that sort of thing. I mean, to me, it seems like a gimmick, but I don't see anything wrong with them. I would look at the label and see how I think most of them are pretty low in sugars, and they're just made to, you know, basically give your water a little flavor. I don't drink a whole lot of plain water myself. I like carbonated water, which is, you know, more expensive, and I'm not endorsing it as more nutritious. It's just, it just helps me get more water intake during the day. And so however you enjoy your water, if you need a little flavoring, I always keep lemons and limes in my refrigerator, and this time of year, cucumbers. To put in a little slice in my glass of water, to me, makes it a whole new beverage.
Oh, I love cucumber in water.
Isn't it? It's so refreshing.
Oh.
And at this time time of year that cucumbers are coming in beautifully, finally, now that we've had a little rain. And, you know, it's just a delicious beverage. It's making my mouth water as we're talking. And, you know, adds practically no calories or anything else, just a little bit of an interesting flavor to pep up your water a little bit. So, right. You know, different strokes for different folks, however you enjoy your water. One thing I will point out to the people listening on the radio is that it's a really good idea to get little kids used to drinking plain water.
Mm-hmm.
And I think one of the reasons maybe Gene and I don't drink as much plain water with relish and enjoyment as we might is that we learn to like the sweeter flavor of sodas and things like that. And then going back to water seems kind of blah. But if you're used to having, one of the recommendations I've seen is, you know, just make sure like every other beverage is water. And then, you know, there's milk and fruit juice as way preferred over sodas and that sort of thing. And really realize that you should have red alarm bells going off in your head. If you think back of all the beverages you had yesterday, was most of your liquid intake in the form of something that had a lot of added sugar? If it was, and that's true for many Americans, then think about where to start. Maybe your iced tea, maybe your cola flavored beverage. Maybe you'd enjoy that just as much if it was a diet beverage. Or maybe if you make every other beverage water, that would be a great way to start and then take another step from there.
Mm-hmm.
I think all of us have something that we could do that wouldn't just be suffering to cut down on our intakes of added sugars.
Yeah, absolutely. Jean, is your husband catching any fish?
Not lately. It's too hot.
Too hot.
Oh, yeah. Well, say hi to Carl for us.
I will. Thanks.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Jean's husband, Carl, is a fishing guy.
He is, and he's a great guy and a very entertaining person to go fishing with.
Let's go to Jerry in Appleton next. Hi, Jerry.
Hi. Yeah, my husband was just diagnosed with diabetes, and I read an article about real maple syrup, you know, not the processed or store-made stuff, and that it can actually be beneficial in small amounts. And second question real quick is, what's the difference between raw and white sugar?
Okay.
Okay, well, I hate to disappoint you, Jerry, but whoever was trying to convince you that maple syrup has nutritional advantages over regular sugar, especially for a person with diabetes, I think is trying to sell maple syrup.
Hmm.
It's on the list of things that count as added sugars. You know, it has a more interesting flavor, so you might find
definitely.
That you could use a little less when you're trying, you know, certain things taste really good with a little maple syrup. We use real maple syrup at home a lot. But don't fool yourself.
Vanilla ice cream?
So, geez, don't get me started. Gina, who just called earlier, used to make her own maple syrup, and it was wonderful. You know, it's a wonderful sweet flavor, but it really nutritionally doesn't have any advantages over other forms of sugar.
What about raw sugar versus...
Oh, yeah, the raw sugar. Again, you could split hairs and you could say, well, it has a little bit of molasses is in that same category because basically if you take the molasses out of lightly processed sugar cane extract, you get raw sugar.
Yeah.
And then if you take all of the molasses out, it gets white.
Mm-hmm.
Or brown sugar, they're all sort of in that kind of mm-hmm. halfway between molasses and white sugar category. But anyway, I digress. On a practical basis, there's no nutritional advantage to raw sugar, and it's often more expensive.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Bill in La Crosse, your turn. Hi, Bill.
Hi. Nice to talk to you. My question has to do with artificial sweeteners. I've been diagnosed as pre-diabetic,
mm-hmm.
and I'm wondering if those artificial sweeteners would be the right option for me versus regular sugar and which ones of the various ones, Equal, Splenda, Sweet Plus, and all those different ones
mm-hmm.
make any difference?
Yeah, Bill, I'm so glad you asked about that because there's a lot of sort of beliefs about what consumers often call artificial sweeteners or what these scientific groups call non-nutritive sweeteners. And according to the American Dietetic Association and a new position statement, now the Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics, I have to train myself to use the new term, as well as the American Heart Association and the American Diabetes Association that also just published a new position paper on sweeteners. These compounds that have been found safe by the Food and Drug Administration and that are used in manufacturing of various foods can be an advantage for people with or without diabetes, or in the caller's case, in Bill's case, with prediabetes. If you work at it, you can cut your intake of added sugars by using a little bit of these artificial sweetener products, whether it's the stevia extract that we talked about a minute ago, or aspartame, or sucralose, or acesulfame K, or any of the sort of dozen products that are available either in processed foods or at the grocery store. But you have to work at it. And a lot of people will have a diet product, whether it's diet Jell-O or diet soda or something, and then think, well, that means I can have a cookie. And they've just, you know, defeated the whole purpose, yeah. And then wonder why they're not losing weight or why their blood sugar is still high. So you really, no matter what you do, you have to make a concerted effort to keep your added sugars under control. And using these non-nutritive sweeteners or these highly concentrated sweet products that are in some cases very highly processed as well is sort of a personal choice. They're not being promoted by the scientific groups, but we are being reassured that they can't find anything wrong with them, and for some people they're very useful. The only caveat I would have is the one I already mentioned. If you use them to give your children very sweet flavors all day long, that's probably not harmful from a physical sense of any great sort of poisoning kind of danger, but you are teaching them to really enhance and enjoy the sweet flavor of foods, which they already have plenty of that preference built in when they're born, and we don't need to overly encourage that.
Thank you very much for calling. Bevan Livingston, hi to you.
Hi, and thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I thoroughly agree with your last statement, is that there's so much natural sweeteners in Mother Earth's fruits that we really don't need that. I tend to believe that it's addictive of any kind, whether it's artificial or not. My question, I've been asked to make pies without sugar or artificial of any kind. So the apples I pretty much got, but one lady wants pumpkin, and I wondered, how would I sweeten that? What could I use that would be natural and it wouldn't spike her sugar?
Hmm. Well, that last phrase that you had, that wouldn't spike her sugar, really tells me a lot. A lot of people with diabetes really believe that they just can't eat anything with sugar in it, and that's not true.
Mm-hmm.
They have to be careful not to overdo sugars, and they have to, some of them have to do what we call carbohydrate counting to minimize their sugar intake, but almost every diabetic doesn't have to go to zero with their intake of added sugar.
Mm-hmm.
If they don't want to use artificial sweeteners like aspartame, as we mentioned a little while ago, or acesulfame K or the other, you know, Sunets and all those products that are available on the market,
mm-hmm.
then your hands are kind of tied. I mean, you can't have the sweet flavor for nothing.
Mm-hmm.
This particular person might like the flavor of stevia and might consider that more natural and might be happy if you made your pumpkin pie with a little stevia for sweetener.
Mm-hmm.
You can buy that in most big grocery stores right along with, you know, I know the grocery stores I go to would have a little section of what you might call artificial sweeteners or these non-nutritive sweeteners next to the same part of the aisle where they sell sugar.
Yeah.
And I bet the person who's asking you that would be happy if you made your pumpkin pie with a little stevia.
Well, she's under the belief also that any kind of sweetener is addictive to her.
And, oh, addictive?
Yeah, addictive.
Well, that brings up a whole other thing that I'm happy to talk about.
Good.
Yes, I firmly believe that it, either artificial or real, it's an addictive substance because we're after the taste, you know, not necessarily the product, but the taste.
Yeah, well, let me take issue with you on that.
Okay.
And let me point out that this is somewhat controversial in the scientific community as well. Mm-hmm. And it's discussed in this position paper that I talked about from the Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics, which you're welcome to look at online. It's available to the public. You can't print it out, but you can read it as a PDF online.
Okay.
It's quite technical, but they do point out that our preference for sweet tastes, it's innate. Every baby is born loving sweet flavors, and it just, you know, it's hard to get rid of that preference, and it's easy to over-encourage it as children grow. Whether that meets the definition of an addiction it depends a little bit on how you define what makes things addictive. It's not addictive to the same degree as alcohol is to an alcoholic, for instance. But there are people who just report that they crave sweet flavors. And, you know, we get ourselves used to things that are so sweet that then suddenly when we're trying not to eat so much, it can seem like we're suffering. But there are other aspects of what makes a substance truly addictive that the preference for sweet flavors does not meet those definitions. So I encourage our extension educators to not encourage people to believe that sugar is addictive. That doesn't mean I don't think it's a good idea to cut back and cut back gradually if you find yourself craving a lot of sugar. But to think of it as an addiction, I think, is a little bit of an overkill.
Okay. There you go. Thank you, Bev. And Marty in Douglas County. Hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Good afternoon. I'd like to get in on this bandwagon, if I could, with just a couple of thoughts. Sometimes sugar cravings can be caused by yeast or candida overgrowth. That was a case for me. And when I started to get that under control, my cravings really, really dropped.
Okay, let me stop you right there and say
okay.
That. Oh, dear. Let me say that the scientific community says the evidence for that belief is really poor.
Oh.
I've seen books and health products sold with that marketing claim that we somehow need to get rid of the yeast in our body, and eating too much yeast or eating too much sugar makes all this yeast grow and makes us unhappy and unhealthy. The scientific evidence for those claims is really, really weak. That doesn't mean it's impossible, but I'm cautioning you to not just take that as proof that, you have to stay away from sugar, because it's really very questionable.
Oh, and I'm not saying staying away from sugar entirely. And perhaps the placebo effect is what helped me. But I lined up in front of me, I have 5 sweeteners. And in descending order of sugar, is agave has the most sugar in it. And then white, trashy white sugar, maple syrup, coconut palm sugar, and the least amount of sugar is date sugar, which is sugar made from dates. So the woman who called in looking for a sugar substitute, might be something she could consider. And if I may suggest, just cut back by half the sugar you put in anything that you're baking. Honestly, I don't think you can taste the difference.
When you lined up your products, I'm not sure if the serving size was exactly the same for each one.
Yeah,
but
I made sure to do the negotiating on that. Yeah.
Okay, but then did you correct it per 100 calories? Because some have a little more water in them than others and that sort of thing. So what I'm saying is, whether it comes from dates or apples or cane or all those other sources, we get the same amount of added sugar substance, no matter where that added sugar comes from, even dates.
Yeah, even dates.
Mm-hmm.
There you go. Thank you for calling. I appreciate your call. I want a Facebook comment from Margaret. She has a stevia plant growing in a pot in her backyard, and she's had it since last summer. She cuts a branch off, and dries the leaves and uses them in almost anything.
Right. I know people who grow a stevia plant just for that purpose. And, you know, when they're making iced tea, they throw in a, mash it up a little bit and throw in a stevia leaf, and it makes it a little sweeter. There are a lot of compounds in a stevia leaf besides this very sweet chemical that gives it its sweetness. So it's not exactly the same as the stevia extract, which is a very highly purified piece of that stevia juice. But, you know, the sweet flavor comes from that same piece of the stevia juice. And it's another way to use stevia if you enjoy it that way. As far as I know, there's no nutritional advantage or harm in using a stevia leaf from your plant on your windowsill.
And you've got a brought a can of Pepsi next, which is
well,
new.
I wasn't going to name the name, but okay, sure.
Yeah, well, we might as well.
Okay, so I saw this product at the grocery store recently, and I thought, oh, what's this, a new kind of Pepsi? And then I saw ads for it, and so I purchased some to see what it was in it. And I brought some along with me. It's interesting. It has less sugar. It has sugar, 60 calories per can, which is about, I think, a third of the regular amount from just regular Pepsi. So it is lower in sugar, but it's not zero sugar, and it's lower in calories, but it's not zero calories. And I thought, well, interesting. The ingredients are carbonated water is the first one, then high fructose corn syrup. So it's starting out like regular Pepsi, and then color and flavorings and that sort of thing. And then the extra sweetener comes from aspartame, acesulfame K, which is acesulfame potassium, and sucralose. So, well, how about that? It's, you know, so it's sort of a hybrid. It's
hybrid,
sort of like,
lots of different.
And I've heard from friends of mine who are food processor experts that a lot of research goes into what blends of these different artificial sweeteners can give the most flavor like real sugar, and that's what this product took advantage of.
Always a pleasure, Sue. Thank you so much. You'll come back again, I hope.
I'd love to.
Sue Nitzke, our guest, emerita professor and extension specialist at Nutritional Sciences at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Thanks to her. Thank you for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store here on the Ideas Network.